Do it every time. Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today is Thursday, March 3rd, 2022. Let the record reflect the time is 3:31 p.m. Today we have President Vice Chair Senator Reinbold, Senator Costello, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Holland, and myself, Senator Schauer. Chair, I'd like to remind everybody, please turn off your cell phones. We have staff assisting us today is Ed King from Senator Holland's office as a committee aide. My committee aide is out right now under the weather. We've got Carrie with Senate Records and Jake with LIO. This is a little bit of an odd announcement here, but to members of the public, the documents are uploaded, but not tied to this meeting specifically. And the reason is, since they were linked to the canceled meeting this past Tuesday, the 1st of March, you can find them under the appropriate bill numbers. The data will be there. It's just we didn't link them quite correctly when we canceled last minute for the sickness in the office. All right, we have six bills on today's agenda. I'm not going to read the whole title just based on time. We do have House Bill 157 from Representative Rasmussen's office we'll be hearing. Senate Resolution 3 from my office, Senate Bill 136 from Senator Myers, Senate Bill 145 from Senator Holland, Senate Bill 115 from Senator Keel, and Senate Bill 161 from Senator Wilikowski. Hopefully we'll get to all of them today. We're going to move on to bills scheduled to be heard. The first one we're going to hear today is Senate Bill 145, an act relating to per diem for legislators and providing for an effective date from Senator Holland. This bill has been heard, and we're going to open it for public testimony if we have any. And we do have the sponsor here to answer any final questions. We have received no amendments, and my intent is to move the bill out of committee today. So we're going to go ahead and, first of all, ask the sponsor if he has any words for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All I'll say about Senate Bill 145, the one dissenting voice against it seems to be amongst legislators who are worried that we will create an elite class of legislators who don't rely on per diem to get through their daily life. And I would look at it the other way. I think we're going to create an elite class of legislators who would be motivated to complete our one job, the budget, on time in the four-month period that we have to complete it. I'm not really at all concerned about I do understand the importance of per diem. It is expensive to live in this town and maintain a home in another city somewhere else. But it is our one job, and we should complete our budget on time.
Okay, thank you. And we'll go ahead and open up the floor to I will comment to that sometimes the per diem, even as high as it is, doesn't cover living here in the summertime. That being said, open it up to committee members that might have comments or questions. Senator Ramble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Holland, for bringing this forth. I do support the bill, and I'm actually happy it's moving out of committee today. I just have one concern that I'm going to put on record again, is that I want to make sure that the House gets it, the bill, you know, the budget's over to us so we can have meaningful time to review. It's my fault. I didn't do an amendment. That's one thing I was going to do. It put it in, but that's I just don't want to be put in this massive rush where we have to, you know, vote within a day or so. So anyway, with that, but I do want to thank you for bringing it forward.
Okay. Other committee members, any questions, comments? Do appreciate Senator Ramble's comments there. We have seen that before, and don't forget, of course, you'll have the opportunity on the floor if you'd like to maybe put an amendment in as well and get some allies to help you. Okay, that being said, we're going to go ahead and open up public testimony this time on Senate Bill 145. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, we're going to move online. And I don't see anybody online. So seeing and hearing none, we're going to go ahead and close public testimony on Senate Bill 145. Sponsor, one last chance. Senator Holland, any last comments before we look to move at the
Mr.
will
Chair,
of the committee?
Thank you.
Best comment seen to date, or at least today. All right. That being said, any further comments from committee members? All right. Seeing no further action of the bill, Senator Reinbold, do you have a motion for the will of the committee?
Chair Schauer, I move that SB 145 version 32 LS 1043 /A with attached fiscal notes, individual recommendations, and accompanying documents be moved out of Senate State Affairs Committee, and we authorize LegLegal to get permission to give any technical or conforming changes.
Does anyone object to moving this bill out of committee? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 145 passes from committee. We're going to take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. That better. Just making sure no jumps. Look, yeah. Oh boy, you know, this committee could get interesting by the time we hit 5 o'clock. Next bill we hear will be Senate Bill 136, an act related to firearms and other weapons restrictions. Senator Myers, if you'd like to bring it to the table, please. Oh, boy. Everybody watching is going to be, what the heck are they doing? This bill has been heard, and the sponsor is here to address any final questions. We've received no amendments, and public testimony has also been done. My intent is to move the bill out of committee today. Sponsor, any final comments on the bill, Senator Myers?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. We've been over it quite a bit.
Okay, copy that. We do have your staff. If there's any lifelines you need, committee members, any further questions or comments? Okay. Seeing no further action on the bill, Senator Reinbold, do you have a motion for the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute SB 136 version 32LS0856B with attached fiscal notes, individual recommendations, accompanying documents to be moved out of Senate State Affairs, and we allow alleged legal permission to make any technical or conforming changes.
Thank you. Does anybody have an objection to moving this bill out of committee? Seeing and hearing none, we're going to go ahead and take a brief at ease as we pass Senate Bill 136 from State Affairs. All right, Senate State Affairs is back on the record. Next bill is, or actually resolution, apologize, Senate Resolution 3, relating to nonprofit, non-governmental organization support for veterans in Alaska. That would be by myself. This is the bill's first hearing. I'm going to go ahead and introduce the resolution. We'll take invited and public testimony, and we're going to go through the sponsor statement. Just for the record, I will confirm there is a fiscal note attached, which is zero, and there is no sectional analysis due to the short length and the fact it is a resolution. That being said, I'll walk through the sponsor statement. Senate Resolution 3 was introduced to encourage nonprofits that serve military veterans to keep a greater portion of the money raised for veterans in Alaska. Alaska is home to the highest per capita of veterans of any state in the Union. Local Alaskans are very generous with their support of our veteran population. This makes Alaska a very lucrative place to raise money by nonprofits that serve veterans. This resolution was written to encourage nonprofits to honor the commitment Alaskans make to their veterans by supporting programs for veterans, and encourage nonprofits to keep the greatest amount of money possible that is raised in Alaska for Alaska veterans. That being said, I'll open it up at this time to questions or comments from committee members. Okay, seeing and hearing none at this time, we're going to go ahead and go to invited testimony. And this time we're going to start with Richard Heller. And just for the rules here, what I'm going to try to do is limit it to about 4 minutes max of each person since you're invited testimony, just so that we keep things moving. So if you can do less, that's awesome. I'd like you to go ahead and put yourself on the record with your name, who you represent, location, and when you're ready, Richard, go ahead. You have the floor.
Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear, sir. Go ahead with the – put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Richard Heller, and I live in the Butte area near Palmer. I represent myself. I'm a 100% disabled veteran with 8 vertebrae fused at this point in my life. I came back in the Army in 2005 at 38 years old after 9/11. I had served previously in West Germany in the late 80s and was there when the wall came down. I've been an Alaskan since June of 2005, and I've spent 16 months in Iraq. I've been a recipient of help from the VA and some nonprofits here in the state. As a direct awardee, I see this from my perspective. I'm here today in support of Senator Schauer and SR3. We must get our veteran and, frankly, all nonprofits under control. WASO alone has over 3,000 nonprofits. That does include veterans. As stated in this resolution, we have issues with our veterans, especially with the multitude of fair-weather vet nonprofits. I say fair weather in that from May to September, all you see is group activities, as Alaska has always been a playground for hunters, fishermen, and outdoor enthusiasts. What about the winter months? From my perspective, and I have been looking at this for almost 3 years now, along with my friend Sean, there must be accountability. If you look, you can track what I call money laundering schemes. A vet nonprofit holds their annual fundraiser, and another nonprofit, both in state and out of state, give them donor monies and support. All groups need to present their 990s, as Federal Senator Chuck Grassley's 434-page documentation states. They need to do this on a regular basis, and this needs to be accessible to Alaskans, that we understand what our donations are going and doing to actually help our Alaskan vets. There is an issue if only 18% of the veterans in our state are using the VA facilities or programs. Our homeless, so and some don't want help, is off the charts, and other groups tout how they help the homeless. A particular local nonprofit, which has been at this for a lot of years and gets funding, didn't hold their event until November 4th of this past year, and they did not have an event in 2020. They rely on the VA social workers bringing in the vets to come in through the VA during the previous year. Remember, 18%. What about the hundreds that are out there that don't come in? Other national nonprofits have $1 billion in savings for their 100-year plan for roughly 850 designated vets. They also have 500 employees with 0 employees in Alaska. This is a national vet nonprofit that has taken millions of Alaskan money with very little return in help, along with 11 other small veteran states. They have yet to disclose their spending here in Alaska and have been contacted by at least Senator Hughes. This is just the tip of the iceberg, and I would welcome any questions of me, but request the state form a committee or working group that holds all nonprofits accountable for the spending in Alaska for Alaskans with Alaskan and national funds, or at least hold our local legislators accountable for veteran funding issues. Thank you, Senator Schauer, and this committee for allowing me to speak.
Thanks, Richard, and appreciate the timeliness of that. We'll go ahead, since it's invited testimony, are there any questions of Richard at this time? Okay, thanks. Nope. Okay, thanks, Richard. I appreciate it. We're going to move on to the next invited testimony is from Rick Casillo. Rick, go ahead and put yourself on the record. Name, who you represent, location, 4 minutes or less. You're up.
For the record, my name is Rick Castillo. I am representing myself as a veteran of Alaska, and I'm located in Anchorage. First and foremost, thank you, Chair Schauer, Vice Chair Reinbold, and members of the State Affairs Committee for allowing me to speak on behalf of Senate Resolution 3, a resolution relating to nonprofit, non-governmental organization support for veterans in Alaska. As I stated for the record, my name is Rick Castillo, and I'm a proud U.S. Army veteran who has served with the 1st and 501st Infantry Airborne and the 425th Airborne Brigade Combat Team at Jay Bear, Alaska. I exited active duty soldier as a junior NCO and served as an additional 2 years with the Alaska National Guard. I first came to Alaska in 2007 and have learned very quickly what integrity, honor, and fortitude look like. Of all these things, what was most profound to me was integrity. Today, I believe integrity is paramount in all aspects of business and government and is the root of transparency which guides the hardened minds of the public and keeps them from formulating an opinion or idea of bias involving nepotism, special interests, or some sort of corruption. Over the past few decades, we've seen a proliferation of NGO missions in the name of assisting veterans. Not just within our state, but nationally, organizations operating in several states within the union. Although many of these organizations are desperately needed and were desired for in our communities, there are many who have been opportunistic in using the veteran mission, which generate large salaries, large boards and bureaucracy, and do little to affect the mission within their particular state in which they are soliciting donations from. I want to be very clear about my speaking in support of SR3 today. This is not an attack or a disincentive to NGOs who stand to fill the gap for veterans within their communities. This is a process that builds on the transparency of good government, being that many of these NGOs benefit from grants, federal and state funding, and charitable donations. SR3 also serves as a foundation that builds our strong and charitable base within our state. Our Alaskans are honorable, they're charitable, and they recognize the value and input from veterans all across our state. To them, this is a code of ethic and a promise that we do the due diligence and honor their recognition of every warfighter, the wounded in combat riddles, and those that have paid the ultimate sacrifice, remembering their ongoing legacy for the rest of our lives. We're ensuring that donors across our state know how much of their contribution is going towards the support of veterans within Alaska. Veterans are working harder than ever before to build organizations through bipartisanship to better serve our communities, our states, and our nations. Our state veterans have become exhausted and being used for political agendas and financial gain when veterans across the state are still homeless, still unemployed, and suffering under gross mental health issues, our generous pool of donors from the public stands a bit conflicted. The charitable donors of our state deserve to know and to simply find how far that dollar goes towards impacting their mission, how that dollar impacts the veteran on the local level, and how much of their donation leaves the state to impact areas that are unrelated to Alaska. I'd like to thank Senator Schauer for this very important resolution, and again, to the State Affairs Committee for allowing me to speak today.
Thanks, Rick. And any questions for him? From members? All right. We're going to move on to Kyle Kaiser. Kyle, it's good to hear from you today. Go ahead and put yourself on the record, name, location, who you represent. When you're ready, begin.
My name is Kyle Kaiser. I'm representing from Peters Creek, Alaska. I'm representing Viper Transitions, an Alaskan-based veteran nonprofit. I'm speaking in support of this resolution because as a local nonprofit, it is incredibly hard to compete with some of the national groups that come into our state and essentially suck up all of the funding and benefits that there are for those of us in the state doing everything we can every day to help support our veterans. I'm a veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan. I served in the 1st of the 501st Airborne Infantry Unit out of Jaber. And I've committed my life to helping veterans deal with the issues that are affecting our community. And we do it in a local, intimate base with the veterans here in Alaska. We provide training. We connect veterans with mental health resources. We connect them with employers and get guaranteed employment opportunities across multiple industries with multiple employers here in the state of Alaska. One of the biggest frustrations we face as a nonprofit ties directly to where the funding comes from. We see dollars come and go through the state. We see private money getting donated to different groups that will take it and go somewhere else with it. And as the brothers before me have testified, it needs to stop. There's no reason that the money being donated to a nonprofit can't be accounted for and should be openly visible to the community for people to see where it's being spent. If it's raised in Alaska, it should stay in Alaska. If it's raised in Alaska to support Alaskan veterans, then it should do that. Our nonprofit is based off of serving our community here locally, and we scrape by with as many donations as we can get. But as a startup nonprofit, it's incredibly hard to get your name recognition out and to have people want to support you, because you'll hear who they already support, and they go, why should I donate to you? I'm already giving money to a veteran nonprofit. And then you're left in an awkward position because you don't want to talk ill of another nonprofit that is doing something for vets. But then you have to try and explain how you're different. And it makes it very complicated. So if we have the transparency to where they can go see where that money is being spent, so when they donate to a nonprofit in Alaska or that says they're working in Alaska, they can see what they're doing. There's a transparency and openness. And I would like to thank Senator Schauer and the committee for allowing me to testify today. This is definitely something that needs to be addressed for the betterment of Alaska and the betterment of our veteran communities here.
Thanks, Kyle. And we're going to go ahead and see if there's any questions from committee members. Senator Hall?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. So, Kyle, was it Viper Transitions that you were with?
Yes, sir.
Or is that the crew that's rehabilitating that C-47 in the FedEx hangar?
Sure.
He said, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because I had misheard the name of it first. I just want to take a moment. I'm sure we may even hear from one more veteran. But, we're hearing from a lot of veterans, and this veteran support group. And it, I appreciate all the work they've done. That is truly an interesting project that they have going with Viper Transitions. And they have great potential to do great work in Alaska.
They absolutely do, and I know Kyle because I've been working with him for some time on this issue of the Viper. We're also trying to get him the hangar and anchors that's over on the guard side as well, and I hope that's going to happen soon with some other assets in Alaska that we're working on. So it's a pretty broad and nationwide outreach effort to get them into the trades. So thank you for that. Other comments? Thanks, Kyle. We're going to move on to Sean Bennett. Sean, welcome to State Affairs. Put yourself on the record, please, with name, location, who you represent, 4 minutes or less, please. You go. Go ahead.
I'm down in Nenelchik. I guess I'm down here. Oh, I'm actually up from you guys here in Juneau. I was the former state manager of the Wounded Warrior Project.
This word's going to take me a minute. I'm sorry, Mike.
All right, go ahead. When you're ready, Sean.
I get like 2 minutes for this. I'm the one for like 5 years that we didn't have a whole lot of suicides because I used to fly around the state and WWP handed me $250,000 a year for me and one other employee. And we killed ourselves. And Laddie Shaw, everybody knows Josh Reback because they went fishing with me. That's why we're trying to get this done. And Viper's trying to do that with Kyle. You guys aren't giving us help. Fix this, please. You can't fix our suicides. I'm the emotional one. I let them three talk. But you got to help us. Mike knows I'm not going to take any more of your time. You need to talk to Rick. When he said he wanted to help, he literally does. Kyle's doing it so hard. He's got Viper. Y'all are trying to figure out a hangar. He's trying to figure out veterans' lives that are transitioning. Richard's just been going through this for 3 years. I'm not even gonna explain how long it took to get to you guys with Mike. So help us. Let Mike be our voice and let the veterans in our community try to do the right thing. Help. Because I'm burned out. Thank you, Mike.
You got it, Sean. Thanks for the testimony, and sometimes the emotions matter, my friend. It gets it across how important it is. And you guys have been busting your tails trying to help people. So you've got my commitment to this. We're not done. We have a long ways to go, but we're going to do our best. And I'm going to open it up just in case there's any comments or questions from committee members. Go ahead.
Thank you for your heartfelt testimony. I don't say money makes the world go around. I say volunteers and good-hearted people make the world go around. And so thank you for your heartfelt testimony and all you're doing to help the veterans in our community. They are precious.
Okay.
I was your assist provider for the state. Give me 10 seconds. That's your suicide. Me and my wife would take the phone calls. We don't have that in the state right now. And infrastructure is on us. If we want our votes as veterans, help. Just help, please. Mike, thank you for your time. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean, again, for calling in and for all the work you have done. There's a lot to do. And I've had conversations with all of the men here. I know all of them on this call, and they've heard me talk about as well. My son served in Iraq in the Marines, and half of his platoon, half, these are young men, committed suicide in the last few years. So it's something that should be on the minds of anybody that's thinking about what our veterans have gone through. So I certainly understand it in that sense. So that being said, we're going to close. Well, that's our invited testimony. I'm going to go ahead this time and open up public testimony on Senate Resolution 3. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, we're going to go ahead to online. I don't see anybody else that's uninvited. So that being said, we're going to go ahead and close public testimony on Senate Resolution 3. At this time, we're going to set the bill aside. If anyone has amendments, they're due to the office, our office, by next Monday, March 7th, close of business. We plan on bringing the bill back up after that to get it moved on. The next bill, as promised, is going to be House Bill 157. And that's a long title, so hold on. An act requiring the disclosure of the identity of certain groups, and non-group entities that expend money in support of or in opposition to an application filed for a state referendum or recall election relating to the location of offices for the Alaska Public Offices Commission and the locations at which certain statements and reports filed with the commission are made available relating to the duties of the Alaska Public Offices Commission, clarifying the limits on making, accepting, and reporting certain cash campaign contributions relating to campaign finance reporting by certain groups, increasing the time the Alaska Public Offices Commission has to respond to a request for an advisory opinion, repealing and a reporting requirement for certain contributions relating to contribution limits and recall campaigns, and providing for an effective date. Now I know what the Senate Secretary feels like every day when she reads these things. Representative Rasmussen, with your staff, go ahead, if you would, put yourself on the record and walk us through the bill, your introduction, sectional analysis, and fiscal notes. I'll just get it all out front. And then as we need to, if the committee has questions, we'll go ahead and stop and ask when you're ready.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee for hearing our bill today. My name is Representative Sarah Rasmussen. I represent the Sand Lake area in Anchorage, and I have with me my staff, Crystal Kahneman, to help go through the bill. Just briefly, House Bill 157 will require the reporting of certain campaign finance activity to begin earlier in the process. There's currently a loophole that allows groups to create and launch campaigns aimed at changing major policies impacting our state's future. or efforts to remove elected officials from office without releasing financial information until very late in the process. This proposal would require disclosure of contributions and expenditures made to influence a referendum or recall application to an earlier point in the statutory process, as well as reporting of certain campaign finance activity prior to the collection of signatures. We believe that Alaskans deserve an honest, transparent process and have a right to know who is behind any effort to try to impact our state's political and economic future. House Bill 157 closes a loophole that could easily be exploited by dark money and special interests, and my staff will go through the bill in more detail.
Okay. Any questions for the bill sponsor? That being said, Crystal, when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Rasmussen. Section 1 of the bill deals with the applicability related to state election campaigns. It adds language to the applicability section that states the chapter applies to contributions, expenditures, and communications that are made to influence the nomination or election of a candidate, and for the purpose of influencing a ballot proposition or question, or for supporting or opposing initiatives, proposals, recalls, or referendums. Section 2 of the bill modifies the overall Alaska Public Office Commission statute, and it removes the requirement for an APOC office to be located in all Senate districts. This was a request that was brought about by APOC. Their funding has been cut over the years, and given the size of our state and the vastness of it, having a central office is helpful for them. It doesn't preclude any offices in other locations of the state, but then it just centralizes their main office. Section 3 of the bill relates to duties of the commission. Again, this was a request by APOC as the bill was moving through the process. It removes the word all from the phrase examines, investigates, and compares all reports, statements, and actions required by this chapter. Sections 4 through 8 clarifies contribution and expenditures that they are in a calendar year instead of left open-ended. Currently in statute, we don't delineate when those reports are due. APOC has been running with the assumption that it's in a calendar year, and this would codify that in statute. Section 5 is registration before expenditure. This adds language regarding referendums or recalls to the statute that requires persons to register with APOC prior to making an expenditure. Section 6 deals with contributions, adds language related to the referendum and recall application to what's included in the definition of proposition. Section 9, filing of reports. This rewrites the language relating to those receiving or making expenditures to support or oppose referendums. This language is identical to that language that's contained in AS 1513-040K for ballot proposition reporting requirements, as well as 1513-110G for the ballot initiative reporting requirements. So again, it's just bringing things in line with current statute. Section 10, filing of reports, it's a new subsection K for those receiving or making expenditures to support or oppose a recall. This language is similar to Section 4 of the bill. My apologies, Section 9 of the bill that deals with ballot propositions and ballot initiative reporting. Flip my page since it's a long sectional, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Sections 12 through 14 modify the definitions. This allows for the definition of contributions to include groups and referendums and recall applications. It modifies the definition of expenditures to include referendum and recall applications, as well as modifies the definition of group to include referendum and recall applications. Sections 15 and 16 deal with the publication of reports, and it provides for publication of those reports and archives of statements and reports to be posted on APOC's website, as well as having copies available in their central office. Currently, statute does not allow for them to explicitly post them on their website, and this would allow for that to happen. Section 17 repeals AS 1513-040K, which provides the recall applications are subject to group contribution limits, whereas referendum applications are not. Section 18 is the uncodified law that states that this only applies to referendums or recalls filed on or after the effective date of this act. Section 19 is the effective date of January 1, 2022. Obviously, we are past that point in time, so Mr. Chairman, I believe a friendly amendment to update that to January 1 of 2023 would most likely be advisable. And that is the sectional, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Okay, we'll open it up first for committee members. Questions, comments? Senator Hall?
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has any group come forward in opposition of this bill stating that it would just impede the process or even make the process impossible for moving forward?
Through the chair, this is Representative Rasmussen. To date, we have not had any groups come out in opposition. There was some debate on the House floor about creating a bar that's too challenging for individual Alaskans to participate in a recall process. This, as many of us have known from running for office, it's very similar to reporting requirements, and all of us were, you know, first-time candidates for office, so it's just another person doing a campaign for the first time and going through the same hoops that all of us go through when we run for office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kawasaki?
Thank you. Thanks for presenting the bill. I did have a question about the legal memo that was submitted regarding the Ninth Circuit, and particularly the issue of the First Amendment rights of folks. And I know that the last sentence in the memo on page 5 sort of countermands the rest of it. But can you just tell me a little bit more about First Amendment rights when it comes to fundraising?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I could just for the record read the last sentence. Thank you. This is Representative Rasmussen for the record. So the last page 5 says, accordingly, while it is not uncertain at what point an Alaska court might determine that speech relating to recall or referendum application for a measure that may or may not appear on the ballot can constitutionally be required to be disclosed, this bill's expansion of disclosure requirements in the recall and referendum context will likely survive a First Amendment challenge. Our takeaway from that basically indicated that obviously we're not legal professionals, but it appeared that it would not present a challenge in the First Amendment rights. So it would still protect First Amendment and allow for those freedoms that we have.
Well,
So the paragraph just before that talks about it's not certain how a court would evaluate the bill's expansion of disclosure requirements relating to the funds made in support or opposition to a recall or referendum. So I guess that seems to be not sure, and then the last paragraph seems to be fairly certain. So I'm just curious as to why that statement was made. Or if there's any other issues that you can talk about which would affirm the last paragraph.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I could through the chair. This is Representative Rasmussen. I know that my staff, Crystal, had a further conversation on the phone with Alpheus, so I'll go ahead and let her try to answer that one.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kawasaki, there was some back and forth that I had with Alpheus. While people are going through the process right now, there is not any reporting requirement of the funds that they receive or expend through the signature gathering phase. And some of the hypotheticals that we went through were whether or not anything would preclude them from wanting to move forward with this process if they had to disclose that information ahead of time. And so that may be where some of that ambiguity comes in that prior paragraph. But ultimately, the decision that Alpheus had come to at that point was, while there may be concerns, ultimately his reading of this, that there should not be any First Amendment concerns. I don't know if that helps any.
Just so we have them, we did ask Ledge Legal, but they're tapped out right now, so they couldn't be here today. But we do have Heather Hevdon from the, she's the executive director of APOC. If there's a question that anyone would like to answer, she is online. No? Okay. Just in case. And Heather, I do have you there. Do you have any comments on any of the questions so far, just for the record?
Thank you, Chair Schauer. At this point, I don't really have comments, especially as far as the constitutional concerns.
Thank you. Okay. Other questions, comments from committee members? Yeah, Senator Holland.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last quick question. I hadn't caught the thing about shutting down. I'm not shutting down. Pardon me. Section 2 about removal requirement for an APOC office to be located in each Senate district. Now, that's not going to result in any office closures. It's mostly just to reflect real world what's going on today, correct?
Yes, through the chair. This is Representative Rasmussen. There's currently statute that requires each Senate district have an APOC office in that district. It's my understanding that that has not been practiced for quite some time, so we are eliminating one of those pesky statutes that we so love to not always follow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I will say we'll look at the friendly amendment for the date. We'll do that in the next hearing on it. I do find it fascinating that you have that they would be required to publish the information, because as I have discovered myself on election reform and other things, it's been rather difficult to get information at times from certain offices and the bureaucracy. So the transparency that comes with that, and I know that's certainly a part of the intent of the bill, is very important. I think it's very important to the public, and I think it's a bigger process because it's about all of it, whether it's elections or APOC or money, all of that. The more transparent we are, the more faith people will have in the system. And I think it's also just truth in advertising, right? I found it fascinating that I haven't seen opposition, but I have seen letters from somebody that was part of what gave us ballot measure 2 and had exempted themselves from it, as strangely, and even mentioned in his letter of support was that you might find it strange that I now support this. And I'm like, indeed, I do find it strange, without mentioning names. So I haven't seen any opposition either. Like you said, I have seen support in some strange quarters. I'm glad to see it. It is important that we do it. I wish we had done it all along and had not been hiding it in recent campaigns or initiatives. So this is a good step. I do appreciate the bill and the intent of it. At this time, I'll just keep seeing if we have other questions, comments. Senator Ramble.
First of all, thank you. I'm going to color a little bit outside the box in regards to this issue, because I've already made a statement in regards to this issue. I think last time you brought it forth, and I'm glad someone's bringing this issue forth. But I would like to say that yesterday I decided to print off, I try to do this annually, all the lobbyists. And it's like 56 pages, I think, this year. And it just seems to be, it's becoming less and less and less transparent. The more I look at the lobbyist list, the less and less transparent. I think there was only like 3 that listed an actual bill that they were concerned with. And I'm not sure if this bill is the right vehicle to address this or not. But I think far more transparency and what the lobbyists are actually, because I literally try to attach a lobbyist to every bill if I can. That's just part of the way that I think. And I just found it fascinating in that lobbyist directive that they'll be like, this person is a lobbyist, and then they'll say any issues related to this lobbying firm. And then they'll go over to this lobbying firm. There's no names attached at all. And there's $600,000, a lobbying fee, and then all these issues, but nothing is attached to anything, really. So I'm finding it more frustrating every single year, the lack of transparency with the lobbyists, which we all know, you know, kind of rule the coop, kill bills, try to push bills, hush campaigns going around, you know, campaigns going around, undermining work that we're doing. So maybe not be the right vehicle, but I did want to get that on the record, that I do think that the lobbyists and the transparency with the lobbyists absolutely must be addressed. Thank you.
Well, there's always the option for amendment. Senator Reinbold, if you think there's an appropriate one, working with a sponsor. I did have one question for staff. If you, based on the comment for calendar year versus open-ended, what is different from today? As far as how we do that, and what was the reason for locking it into a calendar year versus open-ended? And this is more for the record. I know we talked about it, but Could you explain that?
Absolutely. Chair Schauer, right now, because it says in a year, it doesn't delineate whether it's a calendar year, a fiscal year, or, and so that's really the issue, is just making sure that it is very clear they have been operating under a calendar year. But again, it's more for clarity and to make sure that if there are any challenges regarding those, that they very, you know, that it's very specifically laid out in statute.
And can you also talk to then how that would work in a calendar year where you would have an election from 1 January until before an election for reporting requirements? Because that's something that we're always looking for, right? Where's the loophole that they can go, well, you know, that's calendar year, but we don't have to tell you that until December 31st, but you had an election in November. So how does that work for the record?
Senator Schauer, I would defer to Ms. Hebden on that one to talk about practice of how the AIPAC office works in that regard.
Thank you. Heather, did you hear the question and you want me to restate it, or just getting that on the record how it works in conjunction with this bill?
Chair Schauer, if you could restate it, that would be helpful.
You bet. So what I'm asking here is we are going to a calendar year, right? But people have asked the question, well, that's fine. But then you have, and we clearly have in guidance already, we have reporting requirements at certain times. But how would this legislation as written work in conjunction with an election year like now, where you have things in August, the primary, you have a November election? Any loophole or other issue you would see where somebody might say, well, shoot, I don't have to report this until December 31st. That's not true, of course, but I was wondering if you could just comment for the record how that would work in conjunction with changes made in this bill versus current policy.
Chair Schauer, I don't see that it would change any practice that's currently underway here. Currently, our guidance as far as the cash contributions are that it is per calendar year, regardless of when it needs to be reported. The reportable date is always going to be when it's received. Does that answer your question?
It does. Like I said, Heather, this is just for on the record, because this has actually already come up as a question. Oh, it's calendar year. Do I have to report it after? No, that's not true, but trying to get it so that there's no question of how it currently works and that this doesn't change that. That's all the questions I had for the moment, but I believe Senator Kawasaki has one.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Director Hebden, for being online. I did have a question about Section 2 specifically, that it doesn't the question is, it won't prevent the commission from establishing offices outside of the central office. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, that is my read of it, and we did consult with our attorney at Department of Law when it was first proposed. I believe actually this was legislation that was proposed by Representative Eastman at one time, but that was our read of it, is that it doesn't preclude us from opening additional offices or require us to close any offices. It just establishes a central office.
And then another separate question, because I remember, I mean, it was probably 25 years ago when there was talk about closing AIPAC completely, and I just wanted to hear, this is more of a budget question, but what does the budget look like now compared to where it was at, if you have, you know, some history back there? I know that Senator Reinbold, you know, sort of had the question about, you know, getting information and things like that, and I think that I'm pretty sure, I haven't been on the administration budget, but that your budget's been cut quite a bit in the last 20 years.
For the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I don't have the specific numbers in front of me as far as 20 years ago. I am familiar that there was an attempt to close the agency around that time, and from my memory, which does not always serve 100%, I would say that our budget today is comparable to what it was in the time that happened. So our budget did grow fairly substantially in those 20 years, but over the last 6 years, it has dramatically declined.
Thank you, Director. And it looks like there might be an answer from staff.
Looks like it.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, I don't have direct budget numbers. However, I do know when we did our 10-year look back at personnel in the AIPAC office, there were 13 PCNs in 2015 and four were dedicated to campaign finance as and in 2021 there are eight PCNs with two dedicated to campaign finance. Good. And again, for the record, this is Crystal Keeneman, staff to represent Rasmussen.
And while we're on it, you might as well go ahead and mention the fiscal note since it talks about the PCNs. Let's just get that on the record.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, there is a fiscal note from APOC. It is a request of $111,700, and that is for one PCN, full-time employee, range 14-16 flex for a paralegal one or two and associated costs. Given that there may be an increase of with this reporting requirement, there may be additional workload for APOC, understanding that this will likely come in before and an election year, and there may not be that many ballot initiatives or things that would require, given APOC's cuts, I think it's reasonable to assume that the increased personnel would probably benefit the commission.
I give you my opinion, $111,000 when you consider the tens upon tens of millions and really what is hundreds of millions over the years of money that has flowed into this state, that's a bargain to me because I think people just want to know right where it comes from. So a whole nother discussion about stopping it, but at least reporting it so people are informed is very important. So, all right, other comments, questions? Anyone at this time? Okay, we're going to do – I see there's no invited testimony. Is that true? Back, okay, great. So we're going to go to public testimony this time on House Bill 157. So public testimony is now open. Is anyone in the room like to testify? Does anyone? Not good English. Seeing and hearing none, we're going to go online. As I said before, it does not look like we have any. So we have no public testimony online as well. So we're going to go ahead and close public testimony in House Bill 157. At this time, we're going to go ahead and set the bill aside. If anyone has amendments, they're due to our office by next Monday, March 7th, close of business, and then we'll plan to bring the bill back up after that to get it moving. This is an important one, especially having it gone through the House already. It's a big deal. Okay, thanks, ladies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we're actually doing pretty good at 420 for four bills in the committee. So we're going to move on at this time to Senate Bill 115, an act relating to confidentiality of information relating to the duties of the Department of Administration, creating an address confidentiality program and providing for an effective date. This is Senator Keel. This bill has been heard and public testimony as well. The sponsor is here to address final questions. We've received no amendments, and my intent is to move the bill out of committee today. Sponsor, Senator Keel, do you have any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jesse Keel, privileged to represent Senate District Q, joined by my staff, Edric Carrillo. I appreciate the committee taking the bill back up. As you will recall, this creates a safe confidential address where a survivor of domestic violence, sexual assault, or stalking can get their mail without exposing their new address or their post office box potentially to discovery by their former abuser. It is also available to law enforcement and correctional officers who choose to protect their personal addresses through this as well.
Thank you. And just for the record, we do have Brad Ewing from the division or the division director for Sheriff Services, Department of Administration, if there are questions. So do we have any questions or comments for the bill sponsor at this time? It looks like we had three at once. I'll go Senator Rambo. I think just I was looking left first.
First of all, I like the bill. Thank you for coming and meeting with me and talking to me about it as a neighbor in the hall, but for a very friendly neighbor. I just wanted to say that I have an amendment that may be coming on the House floor. I just wanted to, I mean, the Senate floor, just to let you know, in regards to a two-word victim, definition of victim bill, just so the victims can be part of the hearing process if they wish to. But anyway, just wanted to get that on the record just as a warning. But I also wanted to say just thank you very, very much for bringing this forth. I think it's a worthy cause.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank
okay, you. And I know it was Senator – we'll go to Senator Kawasaki first and then Senator Holland.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the definition of correctional officer, and if you can't answer this, maybe staff who's online could. So would that include – I guess it's – is that would that include anybody who's employed at a correctional facility? it's in section 4 of the bill, and it seems to include pretty much anybody that's part of that.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to Senator Kawasaki's question, the intention as we drafted this was to include both state and municipal correctional officers, yes.
And then just a follow-up, and that would include not just correctional officers, but folks that are like staff in a correctional facility. So like the typist or the person who's not necessarily a CO, but another another position within the correctional facility.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to Senator Kawasaki's question, we drafted the bill specifically to correctional officers. You'll see it's those whose primary duty is to provide custody, care, security, control, discipline. That matches definitions in other sections of our statutes dealing with correctional officers. So we cribbed those definitions over to this bill. Those are the folks who spend the most time face-to-face with inmates and who have expressed to us their concern about potential for retribution against their families.
Can you highlight again, Senator Keel, we talked the other day about this, just the numbers so people know what we're talking about, because some of them have the impression this is only a few. They may have the impression this is many thousands, and it's somewhere in the middle. So could you brief that again?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The best estimates we've been able to come up with in terms of the survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, or stalking, we looked at other states, and just on a population basis, those states tend to serve surprisingly few people. And I think the reason for that is that a confidential address like this is going to be beneficial to those who have started over in a new place, which is an extreme step. It's very difficult to do, but for some people who survive these crimes, that's necessary to protect their safety and their families. So when you look at what other states, how many people other states registry serve on a population basis, we estimate that the state of Alaska is likely to serve somewhere in the neighbor of 400 to 600 survivors at any given time. There are over 600 correctional officers in the state of Alaska who might qualify, but again, Mr. Chairman, I think it's worth noting most of those folks won't sign up. Most of those folks have a Facebook or have an online presence of some kind and are not going to pick up and start their lives again to take advantage of this. It will be primarily, in the early years, folks entering into the public safety professions who heed the advice that they're given at the Public Safety Academy in Sitka, at the correctional academies we hold, to protect your address. Keep yourself offline. This bill won't erase anybody's online presence today. So I don't think there will be many of those folks in the early years.
Good summation. Thank you. I just thought I was good to get the back of the record from last year. Senator Holman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification. There's not going to be any screening of the mail. This is not to detect threats or hazards. This is simply just to protect the information of the contact of the correctional officers or the victims that are in the program.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to Senator Holland's question, we give the Department of Administration a lot of leeway to structure this program. In most states, they do not – I'm not aware of any state where they do provide screening. They certainly don't open the mail. It is very common to only forward first-class registered and certified mail. So if somehow a catalog starts coming, that's going to go in the recycle bin. It's not going to be forwarded to you. You will get your ballot. You won't get the flyer I sent you for my campaign.
Follow up?
And a different question. I think you and I had already discussed this, just for clarification. There isn't going to be, say, there's 500 participants. There's not 500 mailboxes with 500 mailbox fees and 500 forwarding addresses. It's going to be probably a central mailing point where the mail is received and dispersed. Correct?
Mr. Chairman, to answer Senator Holland's question, that's my understanding of how other states do it. They have a single central P.O. box. You know, the Division of Shared Services at Admin has a P.O. box now. I don't know if they'd use that one or if they'd open an additional one. But everybody would get the same P.O. box, I believe. And then it would be those staff who run the address protection program who would sort that. And on a periodic basis, whether that's weekly or every 10th day, they would forward the first class certified and registered mail to the program participant.
That hence gives us the indeterminate fiscal note. This is difficult. There will be a cost. It's just hard to know exactly what that is. Also thought it was important to put out the numbers so people understood we're not talking about thousands in this case in a small state. Other questions, comments from committee members? Okay. Final comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I appreciate your consideration of the bill today.
Seeing no further action on the bill, Senator Reinbold, do you have a motion for the will of the committee?
Chair Schauer, I move that SB 115, version 32LS0380-I, with attached fiscal notes, individual recommendations, and accompanying documents, be moved out of Senate State Affairs Committee, and we give LegLegal permission to make any technical or conforming changes.
Thank you. Does anybody object to moving the bill out of committee? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 115 passed from committee. We'll take a brief day to sign paperwork.
Thank you.
Senate State Affairs is back on the record. Next bill we're going to hear today is Senate Bill 161, Act relating to the definition of political party and providing for an effective date, by Senator Willikowski. This bill has been heard. No amendments were received. We'll open this bill for invited public testimony if we have any today. And we do have a sponsor here when you're ready and to address any questions. So if you'd like to open it back up again, we heard this a few weeks ago, with any sponsor additions or statements, and we'll open up for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bill Lukowski, State Senator representing East Anchorage and J-Bear, and I have no comments at this time unless there are questions.
Any questions for the bill sponsor? We're just starting. Senator Kosak.
Thanks. So I don't have a fiscal note in front of me, but is there an added cost, or is the cost borne by the new candidates who are each of the different parties? It's basically cost neutral.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I believe that the administration, for the record, this is David Dunsmore, staff to Senator Willikowski. I believe the administration has submitted a zero fiscal note.
Right.
We do expect that this will allow for some efficiencies and savings within the Division of Elections, because they will presumably have fewer petitions for presidential candidates they will have to process, but that won't be significant enough that would be needed to be reflected budgetarily, and thus the zero fiscal note.
Yep, and it does say at the end, the passage of the legislation will have no fiscal impact on the division, just as a reminder from the brief fiscal note. Good. Okay. Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. I think last time you guys were here, I said, have you heard from the Green Party, from the Constitution Party, all that? Because I actually have no idea of the impact of this bill, and I don't know how it's going to impact these. You just don't want to demotivate people. And so that's why I'm a little iffy on this bill.
Yep. And through the chair, Senator Reinbold, we reached out, as you requested, to the Green Party local affiliate, as well as the Constitution Party. We heard back from the Green Party, which is supportive of lowering the threshold. We have not heard back from the Constitution Party. I can say on a national level, the Constitution Party is a member of the Coalition for Fair and Open Elections, which advocates for bills like this to lower ballot access thresholds.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, for the record, Bill Lukowski, I would just point out that under existing law, that if you would recall that the number of registered voters changes every election because it's based on a percentage, this would set it at a fixed 5,000. Currently, to be recognized, the official number is 10,638 registered voters. So it cuts that in half, which would make it easier for parties to get access to a ballot. And this was requested by a constituent of mine who's active in the Libertarian Party. I don't know if he's on the line or not, but this came to me. I wasn't seeking this out.
Okay. And no, there's nobody online at the moment here. So Senator Bramwell, do you have a follow-up to that? Okay. Other questions, comments from committee members at this time? Senator Holland.
So just remind me, I think it cut it in half this time, but the last election cycle, I think it actually, it was a higher threshold than the last one, and it just shows the fluctuation of it. And I appreciate this bill. I think that this is just going to give us some stability, and people won't have to figure out every election cycle how many signatures they got to get. They'll just know the number and focus on it.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Bill Lukowski, there is this chart that you have in your file, and this shows what the threshold is under the current law going back to 2010. And in 2010, it was roughly close to 8,000, and it's been a little bit higher than 8,000, and then it spiked up over 10,000 in 2020. So this would definitely lower it from any time in the last, since 2010 at least, and probably further than that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I might have misunderstood what I heard last time. Maybe we heard some 20-year-old statistics or something like that. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions or comments at this time? I don't see any invited testimony, but just because we're doing that today to make sure we close the loop, do you have any or aware of any that we should have called in? Okay, great. So we're going to go to public testimony at this time on Senate Bill 161. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none. I do not see anybody online that would like to testify at this time, so we're going to go ahead and close public testimony on Senate Bill 161. All right. Sponsor at this time, like I said, my intent is to move the bill today. We've already asked for and received no amendments at this time, so people can always look at it later if they want to work with it if we're on the floor. Are there any final words you'd like to say? Good move. And any further comments or questions from committee members? I have one from Senator Ramble.
I don't know if you were in the room when I did this before, but there's a big holdup in state affairs over in the House, and it happens to be your party, you know, people that are controlling that. It's been a big problem for, I think, 6 years. So I don't have anything over there right now, like probably a lot of us. But if there's anything you guys can do to help, you know, just it's this is very he's really getting a lot of minority bills through, which I have not seen that courtesy since I've been down here. When the other party is in charge. So I know that maybe we're coloring out of the line, but I don't really care at this moment. I just think that there's a lot of camaraderie from this gentleman that is the chair of this committee getting minority bills through. And if there's anything you guys can do to help teamwork on the other body, if you have any influence over your colleagues in the other house, I would certainly appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And seeing no further action on the bill, Senator Ramble, do you have a motion for the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move SB 161, version 32, LS 1361, /A, with fiscal notes and individual recommendations and accompanying documents to be moved out of Senate State Affairs and give legal permission to make any technical and conforming changes.
That being said, does anybody object to moving this bill out of committee? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 161 will pass out of committee, and we're going to take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Back to order. That concludes our business for the day. Senate State Affairs will meet next Tuesday, March 8, 2022 at 3:30 back in this room. Seeing no further business before the committee, we're going to go ahead and adjourn at 4:40.